It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of CBD. You can participate and have your specific questions answered by emailing sweethomecannabama.com. And now for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Jennifer Boozer, your host, and I am the owner and founder of Cannabama, the CBD store. Here in Mobile, Alabama, we're located at 558 St. Francis Street in downtown Mobile, just one block up from Dauphin Street, right near Wenzel's, and adjacent to the Delta Bike Project. Most people know those two landmarks. We are the giant orange stucco building on the corner behind Delta Bike Project. You can call us anytime you want to check on what we have, what our prices are. If your favorite items are in stock, or schedule some time to meet with me or speak with me, 251-255-5155. And of course, you can shop online if you do not live in Mobile or you don't have time to stop by. You can shop online at cannabama.com. That's cannabama.com. And we'll be happy to take care of you. We are the first and hopefully still the largest CBD superstore in the state of Alabama. It's been, you know, a rowdy 18 months around here. But we are still standing. We are still open, unlike some people. Unfortunately, so many different types of businesses have gone under, including CBD stores around the country. And so we are blessed and grateful to still be alive and kicking. And tonight I have with me my special co-host. You've heard from him if you listen to the show regularly. But Isaiah, my son, who is 20, is here with us tonight. Say
hey,
hi.
Hey, everybody.
And if you shop at Cannabama, you know that Isaiah is there sometimes more than I am. He's there to hold things down when I am trying to go out into the world and find better products and get us some things that aren't even out and available sometimes. Inspect some of these farms and get all the good education that we offer here at Cannabama. So Isaiah is going to be with us tonight. It's kind of a special show tonight. And I kind of want to just get right into it. I know that from the very first show, I have been very open and transparent about the fact that I am in recovery for an addiction to a prescription pain pills. So I am part of the endless amount of people in this country who succumb to the opioid crisis. And so in honor of National Recovery Month, I thought it was appropriate for me to give my entire testimony. I know you guys have heard bits and pieces of it, some bits over and over. But I asked Isaiah here to help me because he was there. And he was around before the pain pill addiction, and he's been around since. I am, next month, 7 years clean. And that is no small feat. And I try not to pat myself on the back, but I'm proud of myself, and I hope that my son and my daughter are both proud of me.
Absolutely.
And so we want to talk about that a little bit tonight, about how that came to be, how we overcame it, and how CBD plays into that, because it is absolutely relevant. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kind of let Isaiah take on the role as interviewer, and I'm going to sort of be the interviewee. So let's get started.
All right, so if you could give us a little bit of background on what led to your addiction, a couple of the events heading into that, and just that point in time in your life.
Okay, so I had Isaiah when I was 23, and my husband and I were very young, and everything was great. I was 23, I had my first kid. Isaiah was a great baby, and when he was 14 months old, we found out we were having a second child. And could not be more happy. I wanted four children. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I gave up college. I was about 48 hours in, and I had no ambition. I wanted to be a mother. That's all that I wanted. And so when your brother came, it was the happiest and, of course, the most tragic thing that we've ever been through. For those of you that don't know the story, and I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version, But my uterus and bladder ruptured giving birth to him through a series of mistakes made in the hospital. And I almost bled to death. I was 25, and my perfectly healthy full-term baby was born alive, but barely. He was brain dead. He was 9 pounds, 1 ounce, and 22 and a half inches long, had a head full of hair, and should be 18 years old right now and starting college. But he died when he was 5 days old. I had to actually take him off of life support when he was 5 days old, because he was dying and we did not want him to pass away alone. And that was indescribably difficult, both physically and emotionally, because I was torn from stem to stern and literally felt like I was holding my insides together with a pillow. And then there was my son who was dying, and I held him after they removed him from the ventilator, and it took 4.5 minutes for his heart to stop. And I remember very little about the funeral except being in a wheelchair, looking at a big hole in the ground in this tiny white casket and wanting just to fall into the hole with him. But I had this little boy, Isaiah. You mm-hmm. and big old blue eyes and a mop of hair, and I was all you had. And yeah. So I had to stay this side of the dirt, and it was incredibly hard. But I discovered by accident, honestly, because there was no such thing as an opioid crisis. I discovered accidentally months later that when I took a pain pill to help with a bulging disc in my neck, that it quieted this screaming inside of me, this ache in my arms, this just heaviness in my heart. It made me numb. And that was sort of the beginning of the end.
Yeah. So after all that started, did you know that you could become addicted to pain pills like you could become addicted to any sort of street drug?
No, I had no idea. I did not realize that you could become addicted to something your doctor gave you. I honestly didn't. I was sort of naive in that way. But like I said, this was 2003. So there was, you know, this was right after, you know, just within a few years of OxyContin even being created, which was ultimately my drug of choice in the end. But no, I had no idea. By the time I went to a doctor and said and told him what my symptoms were, and he said to me, "Well, you're going through withdrawal from drugs," and I was insulted. And I was like, "No, I'm sorry. I don't know who you're talking to. I don't do drugs." And ironically, I even said, "I don't even smoke weed." how ignorant we are until we're not, right? And I didn't even drink. You know, I was like, "This is ridiculous. I don't do drugs." And he explained to me how it was like pharmaceutical grade heroin, and it was no different. And that, yes, I was a drug addict, and by then I didn't care. I needed it.
Yeah. So let's see. Describe what it was like to be in. Well, yeah, we'll go back. How often did you take them, and how did it make you feel?
Well, I at first it was just occasionally. I'm a sharer. I'm a verbalizer. I need to be able to get things out. And I was apparently overwhelming to my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else's life went on, and I had no one but him to talk to. And he, for some reason, was unable to talk to me about it and let me have that outlet. And so I was, I guess, sort of pushing him away in that way. And when I took the pain medicine and that need sort of fell to the wayside, I felt like I could be normal and started doing it every day. And then it mm-hmm. was three times a day. And before you knew it, it was just spiraling out of control.
Mm-hmm. What was the turning point for you to get clean finally?
Well, I went through 10 years of just absolute darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And it took an ultimatum, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to die for a long time, and I didn't. And I couldn't because I had children. And I couldn't stand the thought of them losing their mother in that way. So I stayed alive, but I wanted to die and fantasized about that often, mm-hmm. every single day. I'd hit by a bus, get cancer, whatever, just so I could die and no one would be angry with me. But it took an ultimatum. Took an ultimatum. And it's something that was necessary, I think. When we come back from the break in a few minutes, I'll go into that more and talk about how I transitioned from being an addict to being clean and sober again and what that was even like. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Jennifer Boozer, your host here at Sweet Home Cannabama. I'm here tonight with Isaiah, my son, and we're talking about my personal addiction testimony in honor of National Recovery Month. So let's get back to your questions, Isaiah.
Getting back to the ultimatum, what specifically was that? And
well, so apparently someone suggested to my husband that that he needed to put his foot down with me, because he apparently, you know, was expressing how he didn't know how to help me and that I had gotten to the point where I was suicidal. Mm-hmm. And so he just told me, he came home and said that I needed to get some help or I needed to move out. And there's no point in living to me, you know, having stayed alive for, just for my children's sake, there would be no point in not being with them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I never went and partied. Mm-hmm. I never hung out with ill-reputed people. I did not stay out all night. I was a middle-class suburban mom in a minivan who picked up her kids from Christian school every day. And until I got to the point where I didn't go out at all, went to church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I just needed to do it all numb. And until it got to where I couldn't do anything anymore. Yeah. So the ultimatum was to get clean or go live with your mom. And my mom is 6 hours away, and there was no way I was going to leave my kids. And so it took a little doing, and I was looking at rehab programs. And in the process of getting blood work done, you know, you got to go into these facilities. I thought I'll have to lock myself away as the prisoner. And, you know, I'd never been to rehab. I'd never been to jail. I had never done a lot of the things that typical addicts go through. And so I thought, I'm going to have to punish myself because I'll never be strong enough to do this on my own. And in the process of getting into a program, I had to detox on my own. And then I had to have blood work that took, some of it took weeks. And in that process, God completely delivered me from my addiction one day. I had dealt with a lot of bitterness and unforgiveness toward the hospital staff that caused my son's death, because it was preventable, and that caused me to have to still be having surgeries up to even 2017. I had to have reconstructive surgeries because my insides, you know, the doctor initially told my husband it looked like a hand grenade had gone off in my stomach, and that created a lot of residual damage. And so, you know, that catastrophic amount of pain every time to have another surgery and then come home without a baby still. Mm-hmm. And then thinking we would never have any more. But I ended up, you know, I just sort of surrendered myself and asked God to forgive me for that bitterness and help me to figure out a way to let it go. And when I did, I stopped struggling. I was about 3 weeks clean, and it was like 1,000 pounds of weight came off of me, and I was light. I actually felt like I could have some hope again, and that life might be worth living again. Mm-hmm. And I can't really describe it in enough. I don't know. There aren't really human words.
Yeah.
But it was the most liberating thing for me to be able to feel like I wasn't going to feel the way that I felt in that moment mm-hmm. for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Most addicts are terrified because they don't want to be where they are, and it's a horrible way to live. And no one's harder on an addict than an addict. But and then the shame is a whole other thing. But I knew that there was a chance I would struggle with something. You see so many people in addiction recovery, and they never get past the struggle, the day to day to day, and they claim it over themselves. My name is blank, and I am a blank, you know, an alcoholic or an addict, and they keep speaking that over themselves. And I couldn't do that. The thought of that was worse than staying where I was.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. When did CBD come into the picture, and how did you find out about it?
Well, I was 3 years clean, almost exactly to the day. And it's the one time I had to have my last surgery for the damage that your brother's, you know, birth had caused. I had a giant hernia, and it was about 6 inches, and I needed to have it repaired. And so it was the one time in the last 7 years that I did have to take an opiate. I had surgery, they gave it to me in the hospital, and then I had it for about 8 days after surgery. And I was very careful. Mm-hmm. I knew that it would probably be a source of stress for my husband mm-hmm. to be concerned that I was being left at home while he went to work. I journaled every pill, every reason I took it, what time, you know, where my pain was at. I wanted it to be very, very clear that this isn't a problem, and this isn't something you need to worry about. Because I still in that week and a half or so that I had to take it, I knew that I was still free from that bondage, and then I was not going to do anything to jeopardize that. And on my 3-year clean anniversary, one of my friends that I trust more than anything, who I know would never jeopardize my family, my future, my sobriety, said, "Jennifer, you've got to try this stuff." I was miserable. Mm-hmm. I was on antidepressants, anxiety meds, blood pressure meds for the withdrawal symptoms still after 3 years. And I still had the insomnia that started when your brother died. Mm-hmm. It was 14 years at that point. I had not slept through the night in 14 years. And it was absolutely miserable.
Yep.
And so she suggested I try it. And I ordered it overnight. And I was going through a little bit of withdrawal. Because when you use opiates like that for like a 2-week period, you're going to have some withdrawal symptoms. And I'm still really sore from the surgery. And the first time I took it, within 40 minutes, I had no more pain. It was better than the IV morphine in the hospital for my pain. The soreness and the achiness, my incisions and all that was gone, and my muscles relaxed. My overall pain level was so much better, and I slept through the night for the first time in 14 years. And remember, I know I've told this story on the show a bunch, that I remember waking up thinking, "Am I dead?" Because I was still in my bed and it was light outside, and I didn't feel half crazy, exhausted, and I was just. I was blown away at how effective one serving was for me. And it changed my life. It changed everything for me.
What made you so sure that it would help you recover specifically? After taking it that first time, and you know, what was the
well,
signal
the
for you?
Fact that I was in a mild state of withdrawal and in a lot of pain showed me, and it's funny how God works, because if I had tried CBD at any other point in those 3 years and not been in withdrawal, I might not have come to that conclusion immediately. But because I was in a mild state of withdrawal, nothing compared to when I quit using, But that just that familiar feeling of this doesn't feel good and it's going to take me a couple days to get over this. I would not have realized it. And I immediately remember thinking, this will change recovery. I have to figure out what just happened to me and how to teach it to other people and get them to listen to me. I knew it would change everything, and I became just obsessed with finding a way to make that happen. I couldn't stop the thoughts of all the names and faces in my life, in my family, that I knew needed to know about this.
Mm-hmm. When did you realize you needed to bring CBD to the community?
Well, as soon as I couldn't explain to my mother why this wasn't going to make me relapse, I knew that I needed to be able to explain it fully. And then when I started being able to explain it fully in a way that made her understand that this was a good thing, it was not a bad thing, it wasn't going to put me at risk, it wasn't going to hurt me or anyone else, and that she should try it, and was able to successfully do that in a way that made sense, then I knew that this is what people needed, because I had talked to many people, and my biggest hurdle was getting them to wrap their brains around the fact that this would help them better than what they were doing. And what they were doing was from their doctor, who we're all conditioned to believe is only here to make us well, make us feel better, and fix our problems, when that is just simply not true. And I knew that people needed more than just some wacky chick on the phone or in a meeting or in the grocery store going on about cannabis in Alabama. There needed to be a place they could come and see it and touch it and try it, sample it, and look me in the eye and know that day after day this is what I do and that I'm dedicated to it, and show them one person at a time how it could change their lives.
Awesome. When did you start dreaming up plans for a store?
Immediately. As soon as I came to realize there needs to be a place, yeah. I knew. Nobody's probably as crazy as me. And since I haven't had a job in 17 years, I'm the perfect candidate for this.
Absolutely.
When we come back from the break, we'll go back and talk some more about how Cannabama came to be. And so stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jennifer, your host here at Sweet Home Cannabama. I'm here with my son, Isaiah Boozer, and we're talking about my personal addiction testimony in honor of National Recovery Month. So let's get back to the questions. Isaiah, you brought something up during the break that I think we didn't really have in our bullet points to cover here.
Yeah, so before Cannabama, what were the available ways to get CBD? How did you get CBD? And pretty much, you know, this will all answer the same thing, but what was your first foot in the door with cannabis?
Right. So I initially, my friend was not the first person to suggest CBD to me. Someone I went to high school with did. And I took a cursory glance at it and thought, oh, no, that's cannabis. It's weed. I'm in recovery. I don't smoke weed. That's not for me. And so, you know, that's not allowed in recovery. And I'm so glad that it happened the way that it did to change my mind so thoroughly. And it came through the person that it did, because I probably would not have been willing to risk anything. And I was like everybody else. Like, why wouldn't someone who, you know, is giving me all these medicines tell me to try this if this was harmless, wasn't going to make me relapse, and going to be in any way effective? So, but I found it through her, my friend. She was getting it through a multi-level marketing company, and it was super expensive. And there was a handful of people in Alabama who even knew about it. I started incorporating what I was learning into selling it from home. But again, it was very expensive. You had to order it online and wait for it for 7 days. And it just was such an abstract concept that people just were turned off by the whole thing. And it was very frustrating because, you know, I hadn't worked in a long time. There were no people doing it any other way. And I felt like this insane need to expose people to this. And really, I ended up giving away half of mine trying to get people to try it. And God knows how much I lost in the money department. I made a lot because I taught well. I ended up teaching everybody in Alabama's classes. But I just wanted people to try it, to give it a try. Because every time I could win someone over and get them to be open-minded and try it, and it changed their life, then that meant I would have one more opportunity when they brought me someone else on their testimony. So word of mouth became very important to me because I needed other people around me to have the same experiences I was having in order to help others. But yes, it was very frustrating and very expensive and very foreign concept, mm-hmm. and no one was doing it. You couldn't go into a store and really buy it. So
what was your first real opportunity to get away from that company you started with to then crank out Cannabama? How did that play out?
Well, within a month of trying it, and this was November of 2017, within a month, I started dreaming about how in the world, with no money, no experience, no college degree, no job experience, no nothing, how could I make this happen? And I started out with a partner who I had lunch with one day and blabbed all of my grand plans. God gave me the name Cannabama and this huge vision of what it could be, and then put this fire in me I'd never had before. And I was determined. I would read and educate myself 10, 12 hours a day sometimes. I read everything, watched everything, had every conversation I could get my hands on. And I went to a convention. I went to multiple conventions. I talked to people that had been doing it for a long time. And just I couldn't get enough. I still am pretty voracious when it comes to learning about it. And we'll never truly know everything. But it was exciting to me to be able to really have this wealth of knowledge that no one else around me had. But I started right away. And it took me 9 months to find a way, which was to start out for free in the corner of my partner's hair salon in Satsuma, Alabama, mm-hmm. on the way to nowhere except the ballpark and the police station. And seriously, it was about 200 square feet. You remember how small that place was?
Pretty small.
Yeah. Well, and
I mean, the salon was a decent size, but our portion was...
Yeah. And we used old salon stations to make counters and
had some
really
shelves.
Just...
We probably just screwed a couple shelves in the wall and I'd call it a day.
Right. I mean, it was small.
Put a poster on the wall.
But I taught my first class while we waited for that little bit of product we pooled our money for. And I started a Facebook page and advertised the class. And people came. And then before we knew it, people came from Pensacola, Florida to Gulfport, Mississippi and Biloxi, mm-hmm. all the way to Mobile, which is an hour, and then 20 minutes up the road to Satsuma to come and see us because there was no one doing this. Mm-hmm. We were the first people out of the gate, and there were some coming right on our heels in Birmingham and Huntsville and those places, but below Birmingham, we were it for 9 whole months.
Mm-hmm.
About the end of the 8th month, I think, is when Fairhope Hemp started getting ready to open. And then 3 months later, there was 18 stores in Mobile and Baldwin County. It was just
plus.
Like, boom. Yeah. But we made history, and we made it again. And by the time those stores were finally coming on board, we won our first nappy. And I started this radio show, which I now know, I just now figured this out, is the only public FM radio program on cannabis in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So we just are figuring, and if I'm wrong, I sure can't find any proof, but that we can find. There is no one else on public radio like this. Which is a huge point of pride. Everybody's like, in Alabama. But, you know, I just wanted to teach as many people as possible. So it started a long time before we got going. Mm-hmm. And then we started small. And it was just like a perpetual nuclear explosion after that. Because I know that I started it well with teaching. And I think that what I really offer people, what Canabama really means to the public, is the free education that you can take to any store anywhere and know what you're getting, what you're paying, and know how to use it so that you can have the freedom to get your life back. And that's what makes me very proud.
Mm-hmm. Change up the topic a little bit back to what we were talking about. How have you seen CBD help people in detox or any other part of their recovery?
Well, I was fortunate enough to get to work with some people individually through the store, and I still do, but we were fortunate enough to be able to partner with a sober living facility, and we've had them on the show many times. But there was a sober living facility that agreed to try CBD after a personal relationship with the people that owned it and explaining to them what it had done for me and what mm-hmm. I thought it could do for the women in their facility. And so we have seen miraculous, and I don't use that word lightly, we've seen miraculous things. We're talking about women that are coming out of prison, coming off the streets, from lifelong addictions to IV, heroin, meth, alcohol, antipsychotics, you know, prescription drugs, alcohol, you name it, on top of the traumas and the shame and all of the pain that comes along with a lifestyle so hard. And we have seen them not only detox with minimal suffering, but immediately their brains repairing, their bodies getting back to a stable point where they can sleep, mm-hmm. Eliminating the cravings and the withdrawal and that feeling that if you've never felt it, it feels like every cell in your body is on fire and wants you to do anything you can humanly possibly do mm-hmm. to get that to stop, which is by using your drug. And so when you can eliminate that feeling mm-hmm. and eliminate all of the obstacles like lack of sleep, restlessness, inability to focus, pain, and start to repair the brain chemistry, it is a beautiful, beautiful progress to watch, and it's mm-hmm. very quick and very effective. I've been told by some of the girls, if we had known that there was something this simple and this effective that could have gotten them clean, they would have chosen to get clean years before. And I cringe at the number of people, my father included.
Knowing that it's easier to not get clean than right. to get clean right. is the saddest part.
Including my father, all the people who may have died because they could not face what it was going to take to get clean, because behavioral modification is dismally ineffective. AA and NA have a 20% success rate long term, and that's because there's nothing but white knuckle self-control.
Yeah.
And there's no addressing the root cause, and there's no helping the body and the brain mm-hmm. without sedating it.
Yeah.
Everything in the medical community that's used is also narcotic and highly addictive. And that's where people, yes, it's better to be on a methadone clinic's regimen than, with a needle in your arm in a ditch. But is it? Not if your life is chained to that methadone clinic and your life revolves around it and you're stuck in that bondage. There's nothing like feeling like you have nothing without something as simple as a drug. It's very demoralizing, and it makes me so happy to be able to offer people true freedom.
Mm-hmm. So we want to track back just a little bit here. Describe what it was like to be in complete bondage to the grief and bitterness as well as the pills involving.
Well, everything Elijah's revolved death. Around, do I have pills? How many pills do I have? How long till I get some more? If not, you know, planning vacations, planning dinners out with friends, anything. Everything revolved around whether or not I had pills and could be high, or if I was in abject misery, because I ran out and went through withdrawal many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many times. And every opportunity I had to not go back down that road. I went back down that road because it was that or suffer. And like I said, in that weakness, I didn't feel like I was strong enough to overcome it. And I think secretly I hoped that I would die.
Yeah.
You know, I hoped that it would just finally, I would go to sleep and never wake up. And that's just really brutally honest. And it's funny because then I couldn't imagine having a life that I looked forward to and want something in the future because I didn't want there to be a future. And now I find it hard to remember exactly how deep and dark that feeling was of wanting to die. And I'm so grateful that I haven't felt that way in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in just a minute to conclude the story and conclude the show. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Tonight we're talking about addiction recovery and CBD. And through my own personal testimony, Isaiah, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You were, 13 or 14 when I got clean?
Probably 14, yeah.
You were going into
it was
eighth
right
grade.
Right before eighth grade, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you remember about me getting clean?
Well,
How did you know it was real?
Well, so Dad was pretty good at sheltering me for most of. I didn't even realize pain pills were a thing, or that you were addicted
right.
to anything
right.
until like the last year, so seventh grade or so.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard. I mean, she was like, you know, halfway zombie for most of my childhood, which was interesting because I didn't really think anything of it. And then all of a sudden going into eighth grade, soccer mom, wanting to be a part of everything. We had started doing Bible study. I don't know. It was a lot. And I had to kind of react to it in a particular way because part of me resented her. But at the same time, I was very happy and very proud. And it was probably the first year in before I was really, like, accepted of it, you know, and cool with it, so.
Well, thank you that
yeah.
you never, ever, ever led on to me that you resented me.
Yeah, no, I know that wouldn't have helped.
That's the first time. We've had this conversation many times, and that's the first time you've said anything like that, and I'm glad you did, and I'm not embarrassed that you did it on radio. Because it's real.
Mm-hmm. I thought we had talked about that before. My bad.
No, we hadn't. No, my son is very kind.
But
and my son is very proud, and he's very forgiving, and he has never ever shown me anything negative, and I'm just grateful that God gave me this opportunity to mm-hmm. have a life.
Yeah.
Because I wanted. I didn't want it. I didn't want it. And I'm so thankful
mm-hmm.
that I didn't die when your brother was born and that I didn't kill myself.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that I didn't do any more damage than was done.
Mm-hmm.
And that I am proud to tell our story to other people because we want to give people hope that so many people around us are dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in this, you're not the only one.
Definitely
there's nothing
not.
New under the sun. That's what the Bible says. Nothing. I tell my customers sometimes, there's not a single thought you've ever thought
mm-hmm.
or deed you've ever done that I haven't at least considered,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I told my husband early on, I said, I am deeply guilty and I have deep regret for all the ways that I missed being 100% present and the ways that I could have been better at being a wife, at being a mother. But I cannot live in shame. And shame, I think, is the worst part. No one is, like I said, no one's more harsh a critic on an addict than the addict themselves. And I just needed him to know, you know, I have regret and I'm going to to go out of my way to express that remorse and that regret so that you can heal. But I cannot allow it to make me ashamed ever again. I can't do it. So it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you said that.
Me too. What would you say to anyone who is in active addiction or has a loved one in addiction?
Never, ever, ever, as long as you have breath in your body, ever stop trying to get better. And if you are within the sound of my voice and there is a single thing that I can do to show you through my experience, through our family's experience, that it can get better. And if we can teach you or your loved one who is in active addiction how to get out of that hole, how to get out of that bondage, we want to do that. That is the foundation of Cannabama. Yes, we help people with anxiety and sleep and diabetes, but we are here to keep people like me from dying, to keep people like us from losing ourselves and our children, and to keep people from wasting away and thinking that this is all there is. This is very serious, very personal to me, and this is why I fight every day after everything we've been through, after the pandemic, after a brutal divorce, you know, all of that, to keep the doors open, is because we know we can offer hope to people who have no hope, and that is the whole point. I would say come and see us. We aren't judgmental. We just put it all out there for you. You now know the worst things you could possibly know about me. That is why I am so transparent, because I'm not ashamed. Those things are not who I am. They do not define me anymore. They are part of my past, and that is what led me to where I am today, and it matters. But it is not something that has a hold on me anymore, and I want it to be able to not be ashamed, to be able to move beyond it and continually move forward. It's imperative for me to openly and honestly share that, because what else is there? If I see someone else suffering the way that I did and I can help them, that's what I want. We can help you get into a program. We can help you detox safely. We can help you get the relief that you need and stand a chance against this absolute monkey on your back, this demon that wants to get its clutches on you and not let go. So I would say come and see us. At least consider what we have to say.
What would you like to teach people who work in addiction recovery about CBD and how it can help their patients?
It is not what you think it is. It is not what you think it is. It will not impair a person trying to get clean. It will simply detoxify their body, balance their brain chemistry, flush all that garbage out, and give them a fighting chance. It is not what you think it is. Let me teach you what it is, what it does and what it doesn't do. That's just as important. If you don't want what I have to offer, that's okay. But consider the failure rate around you, because it's not something anyone can deny. Consider the failure rate of recovery and how difficult it is to really make a huge lasting difference. And come see us. That's all we want, is to perpetuate healing. If you have any questions, you can visit us at cannabama.com. Leave us a comment or an email. You can call the store and leave a voicemail, a text message, or speak to someone during business hours at 251-255-5155. And you can actually email me at jennifer@cannabama.com. If you have a story and you want to share it, if CBD has helped you, we're going to talk about this the rest of the month. We're going to have some other guests, but we would love to share your questions, your concerns, and your stories. So please reach out to us. And please, 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 if you need help, do not hesitate to come to us. We will do anything and everything we can to help you. Thank you, Isaiah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're a family member and you want to talk to someone from that perspective, Isaiah's pretty cool about doing stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and I mean, there's plenty of questions I can't answer, but obviously I have a pretty, what does he call it, speed dial.
Yeah. Well, I got you have a good perspective as a child in this situation, you know?
Yeah.
And we know more people than not that have a history of addiction. Mm-hmm. It is ravaging families in every corner of society at every mm-hmm. level, every race, every socioeconomic category, every level of education. It doesn't matter who you are, what you have, or where you came from. Addiction is killing us off. And it's time to get people back to living. So that's what Cannabama wants to do. And we want to highlight addiction recovery efforts. And not saying that what's being done isn't good. It's wonderful. Not saying the CBD is the only thing. It's not. But it's a huge tool that's underutilized, and we want to change that.
Absolutely.
Join us next week. We're going to talk to some girls that went through the program we were just referring to. And until next week, have a great night.
See y'all later.
Thanks.